This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
It's Tuesday, May 7th. The door was shut, but just like that, it's cracked back open. We start here. With the potential invasion of Rafah in sight, Hamas makes a new offer.
I mean, just because Hamas says something doesn't make it true, right?
What this means for thousands of militants and millions of Palestinian civilians. Russia has imprisoned lots of Americans, but not many active army soldiers.
I worried more about him going there than I did to Iraq.
Now an American staff sergeant finds himself in a Russian jail. And his previous vice president saw nooses on the National Mall, so who wants this job?
He basically had like this mini apprentice to audition folks who might be, you know, his run and gun.
The contestants at the front of the line for the Veep stakes. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. We came out of the weekend thinking, well, there's no way Israel and Hamas will sign off on a peace deal anytime soon. Israel hadn't even sent its own negotiators to this big meeting in Cairo this weekend. Hamas's people got up and left with no agreement. Well, then yesterday, Hamas comes out and announces they've agreed to a peace deal. People in the Gaza Strip start cheering in the streets, and yet, a peace deal is not really a peace deal unless both sides agree to it. And throughout the afternoon, you started to get the sense that Israel had barely seen this document, let alone agreed to it. So, what's happening in the Mideast? We turn this morning to ABC's foreign correspondent Jordana Miller in Jerusalem. Jordana, I mean, these ceasefire talks have been so up and down and back and forth, it seems difficult to even follow what's going on. What do we know about the state of play right now?
Right. So, for a moment, there was great hope. As you said, people dancing in the streets in Rafah when Hamas said they accepted the ceasefire. But the footnote is that it wasn't the same proposal that Israel and the mediators had been discussing for weeks. Hamas took that document, made several changes, and then, you know, signed their name and said, here we go, we have a deal, right? Mm. So Israel looked at it and said, well, there's some things here that we can work with and other things are very far from our demands. There's still gaps. And we'll send a delegation now to Cairo to continue exploring every opportunity to reach a deal. But there's no deal. I mean, just because Hamas says something doesn't make it true, right? Mm-hmm. At least there will be more negotiations because we seem to have hit a wall and the talks had stalled again over the weekend. So we're going to have to wait and see. But it looks like we're entering a new round of negotiations.
I mean, do we have a sense of whether things have changed in this proposal, though? Like, are there things Hamas might be willing to reconsider that they weren't considering this weekend?
So we don't know the details of the proposal. There have been some reports from Hamas leaders saying that the group has finally given up, for example, on their demand that the war be declared over and done at the end of the ceasefire. And that Hamas has given up on its demand that Israel fully withdraw from the Gaza Strip. That's what a top official told Al Jazeera. Whether or not it's true, we don't know yet. If it is true, it does provide a window and an opportunity to move forward, because those were the two demands that had really divided the sides and had made a deal so far elusive.
Right. You'd imagine good news for the 100-plus hostages held there as well. Where is the Biden administration in all this when it comes to the negotiations in Cairo? Like, how active is the U.S. when it comes to dealing with Hamas and Israel?
The Biden administration has been very, very active behind the scenes.
As you know, Director Burns is in the region working on this in real time. We will be discussing this response with our partners over the coming hours.
CIA Chief Bill Burns has come and participated to push through and try to coax the sides to come to an agreement.
The president talked with Prime Minister Netanyahu this morning. The call lasted about 30 minutes and was constructive.
President Biden himself has made a flurry of calls about this, but it doesn't mean that he's always seen eye to eye with Israeli leaders.
We've made clear our views about operations in Rafah that could potentially put more than a million innocent people at greater risk.
President Biden opposes a massive military operation in Rafah. And we saw Israel begin its evacuation of about 100,000 Gazans from eastern Rafah.
We fled death and destruction, and we came to Rafah only to find destruction here. Do they want to kill us here?
Hey, let me ask you about Rafah, because yesterday we also heard that Israel is now showering the civilians there trapped in Rafah with pamphlets saying it's time to get out. Like right now, we're ordering an evacuation of this region. People are getting texts on their phones and social media messages in Arabic. And it seemed to suggest this big attack on Rafah is coming. Then we start seeing missile strikes yesterday, Jordana. I guess I'm wondering, is this a coincidence that on the same day Hamas is saying, you know what, actually, we will kind of soften our demands a little bit, that that's the same day Israel is getting real about a Rafah incursion?
It is no coincidence. I mean, of all the days that Hamas could decide it wants to accept a deal, even make changes to a deal and put it on the table, it does it precisely on the day that Israel begins evacuating 100,000 Gazans from Rafah and begins intense airstrikes. Rafah is Hamas's last stronghold. There are over a million civilians there that, and their lives will be in danger, and they must be safely evacuated and effectively evacuated. I'm not sure, and it's unclear if Israel can do that. The United States and the Biden administration is not convinced of that. But the military aims that Israel has in Rafah cannot be disputed. There are thousands of fighters there, four battalions. Mm-hmm. Hamas's leaders, Yahya Sinwar, is hiding in the tunnels. The hostages are there. The underground tunnels from Egypt into Gaza that enabled Hamas to build that underground network of tunnels and all its weapons and capabilities came through Egyptian territory. Israel wants to control that area, and it must really get to Rafah in order to really defeat Hamas. And the dispute with the United States is how to do that. Does Israel need to do a massive military operation? That's what they're threatening. And maybe we're seeing Hamas finally respond to some of that pressure, that military pressure, by its, you know, the steps it's taken, coming to the table and making some changes in an agreement, even if we don't have a deal yet.
Yeah, well, Israel tells these civilians, like, we have safe places for you to go. I mean, make no mistake, when these people were evacuated from their homes further north the first time, at least there were buildings south of them. Now, so much of their territory has been absolutely leveled. Like, the threat of famine there looms so large that a lot of people there are like, I'm sorry, where do you expect us to evacuate to? Jordana Miller, there in Jerusalem. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Next up on Start Here, the U.S. military won't even let its soldiers visit Russia. So how has an American soldier been arrested there? We're back in a bit.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Over the last few years, several Americans have been taken into custody in Russia, accused of various crimes. Some of the charges seem murky, some even seem absurd, but what it all leads to is a sense that Russia has developed kind of a playbook where it arrests Americans and then treats them effectively as hostages, leveraged to get other stuff that it wants. Some of these captives have been former members of the military, others have been journalists, even a WNBA superstar, Brittany Griner, described to ABC what it's like to be detained there.
Really cold. It's a work camp. You go there to work. There's no rest.
Well, yesterday we learned that perhaps the stakes have risen even higher. An active-duty U.S. service member has been detained in Russia. ABC's Anne Flaherty covers the Pentagon and joins us from there. Anne, what happened here?
So a lot of questions with this, Brad. We know that there is a soldier, Staff Sergeant Gordon Black. He was stationed in South Korea, and he was in the process of returning to Fort Cavazos in Texas when he took some of his leave time, where he's supposed to be focused on relocating, and instead he went to Russia. Now, I want to say he did not have permission to travel to Russia. The State Department says it's dangerous. They even go so far as to say all Americans in Russia should leave, that they are not safe there. He went anyway, where he was arrested on charges of stealing. So the Army is confirming that, in fact, he was detained on charges of, quote, criminal misconduct. And they're trying to get access to this soldier to figure out what happened. They've also notified his families, but still a lot of questions.
Wait, so but can we just go back to what he's doing in Russia in the first place? Like, why, if you're not supposed to be there, let alone as a soldier, why is he there?
So U.S. officials say they're still trying to get to the bottom of why exactly Staff Sergeant Black would go to Russia in the first place. ABC reached Black's mother at her home, and she said that he had met a Russian woman named Sasha who was working as a bartender near his base.
He's not a baby no more, so I can't tell him what to do or not do. I told him I really was uncomfortable. I had a bad feeling about him going.
Now, according to Black's mother, they were dating. They had a very volatile relationship. She said it was like fire and ice.
I worried more about him going there than I did to Iraq.
She says that Sasha, the woman, the girlfriend, was deported to Russia a few months ago, and that her son, Gordon Black, wanted to use his leave to visit her.
I knew something was going to happen. I felt like he was being set up by her,
which worried his mother and his family because of that relationship being so volatile. So, you know, again, U.S. officials have not confirmed this. They are still trying to get to the bottom of why a U.S. soldier would put himself at risk by going into a country like Russia at this time of just really high tensions between the U.S. and Russia, and knowing that there are so many other Americans who are held on what U.S. officials say are bogus charges.
Russia continues to detain its own citizens and continues to detain American citizens. And it's why we have tried to make clear, as plainly as we possibly can, that no American citizen should consider traveling to Russia for any reason.
But at the same time, you know, we do know that there are several other American detainees in Russia who face drug and other criminal charges who the U.S. has not deemed wrongfully detained. That's actually a process that they have to go to figure out, OK, are these charges legitimate or are they not?
Like, just because Russia's holding you doesn't mean that it's illegit. Like, there are plenty of people committing crimes in Russia all day. It's a big country. I guess I'm trying to figure out, though, what Russia does with him now, because we've seen what happens when Americans are detained legitimately or not in Russia. Then there's other service members, like there was the guy in South Korea who went up to North Korea. He was released pretty simply. That actually de-escalated pretty quickly. So I guess I'm trying to figure out what happens to this guy now.
Well, we know he's being held in pretrial detention. And that could go through July. We're hearing from experts who say that could even be extended beyond that. Again, it's just going to go down to exactly what Russia is charging him with, whether or not those charges are legitimate, and if the U.S. is going to protest it before we know what exactly happens next.
All right. Anne Flaherty covering all this. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brad.
Former President Donald Trump was back in court yesterday in Manhattan, where, once again, a judge found him in contempt of court. For a 10th time, this judge said Trump would have to pay the maximum fine here, $1,000, but also ominously said this can't keep happening, and that he'd soon have to consider jailing Trump to keep him from making social media posts that violate his gag order. And in some ways, this is the whole thing. Trump has made his battles with the criminal justice system a centerpiece, not a distraction, to his campaign. Some say at this point there's almost no downside for him speaking out like this, because even images of him going to jail will just convince his own supporters that he's being silenced.
Frankly, you know what? Our Constitution is much more important than jail. It's not even close. I'll do that sacrifice any day.
And in the midst of all this, remember, Trump still has yet to select a running mate. Someone who can get him votes, someone who could conceivably fill his shoes if necessary as vice president, and someone you'd imagine who will stick up for him at every turn. This week has posed the question, Who's willing to do all that? And can they help Trump win? ABC's political reporter Brittany Shepherd has been examining the options. Brittany, who is on the list at this point? Do we know?
Well, if you want to get a sense of who might be in play, I think looking at the guest list of this recent donor retreat that Trump had in his backyard in Palm Beach over last weekend might give us a better sense.
They wanted to contribute to a cause of making America great again, and that's what's happened. We're going to make America great again. Everyone knows it.
He basically had like this mini apprentice to audition folks who might be, you know, his run and gun. So that includes Marco Rubio, Elise Stefanik, J.D. Vance, Tim Scott's names people might know, and then North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum and South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem, just to name a few. I feel like the Dakotas are really having their moment right now in the Republican Party. But, you know, sources are telling ABC that Trump is not very far along in the veep stakes process. And, you know, Brad, Trump's inner circle is really mercurial. It can be really liquid these days. And to put a timeline on all of this, the Republican convention starts on July 15th. So I say Trump has about till July 14th or 13th to get the names to the printer, you know, to get the shines and the t-shirts made for the balloon drop. So, you know, he's taking his time because he wants to see how loyal this group is going to be.
Well, that's the thing, the loyalty thing. How are each of these hopeful? And we'll call them hopefuls because it's not a given at this point Trump is even considering them, but you can tell who wants it, right? But usually as a running mate, you think there are going to be issues I don't agree with the president on. That's fine. You kind of finesse that language. But here, I mean, the candidate is saying things that kind of question the entire Democratic system. So how are they navigating that?
Not the smoothest, let's just say that. And if you look at any of the Sunday show bookings, you'll get a sense of who is really vying for that job. You know, Brad, one of the sticking points that I've seen is how this list has been discussing the past, the 2020 election in particular. And it's this balancing act, right? Like, you don't want to use like a DC parlance here, get ahead of the president and break from Trump in saying that there was no tactile evidence the election was stolen and risk taking that guy off. That's someone you really don't want to have against you. But you also at the same time don't want to alienate like suburban moms or independents who are on the fence about Trump at the moment and know what they saw with their own eyes and have heard from reporters, from folks at our network and others that the election was not stolen, right? So you're at this balancing act of trying to serve the pleasure of the former president and, you know, making sure that you're sticking to your own morals. And I think if you just take what folks have been saying on cable news, like Elise Stefanik, who is a fierce, fierce Trump ally, as you know, went on CNN and said that she would not have certified the election.
Radical leftists can't stand the fact that Donald Trump continues to skyrocket in the polls and Joe Biden continues to plummet.
But then you hear similar things from Tim Scott, who's kind of hedging in the middle, who on NBC over the weekend would not directly answer if he would accept the results of the upcoming election if Trump lost, saying, well, Trump's going to win anyway. And that's my statement.
Will you commit to accepting the election results of 2024? Bottom line.
At the end of the day, the 47th president of the United States will be President Donald Trump, and I'm excited to give back to low inflation, low unemployment.
Wait, Senator, yes or no? Yes or no? Will you accept the election results of 2024 no matter who wins?
That is my statement.
And then there's Kristi Noem, who was on CBS this past weekend with her memoir, which debuts today, actually, which dealt with some factual errors and stories of this infamous dog, Cricket, Brad.
Yeah, what is the deal with Cricket? Because I mentioned this yesterday, but just in passing, and I feel like the average person hearing Kristi Noem is like, wait, killed a dog? What is that? What?
Okay, so in her memoir, these excerpts came out early, you know, to book reviewers and such, and it came out that she talked about shooting and killing her 14-month-old hunting dog in training that she felt that was a threat to her family and just not very good at what she got it for.
Well, number one, Joe Biden's dog has attacked 24 Secret Service people. So how many people is enough people to be attacked and dangerously hurt before you make a decision on a dog?
It also came out in more recent days that there's an anecdote about her claiming she had met North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, and folks are saying that actually isn't accurate. Now, her book publisher is actually removing that anecdote from her ebook, from the new printings of the book, and from the audiobook, which she herself recorded. And what's that old Truman quote, right? If you want a friend in Washington, get a dog. I think we have to update this a little bit. Like, if you want to guarantee you have no friends or donors, brag about killing that dog. Because not just Democrats have turned against her, the Biden campaign folks you expect, but Republicans, even folks who are kind of far right Twitter provocateurs are saying, oh, I would never do that to my animal, right? And disavowing her, which is no good when you have to go on TV and essentially bat cleanup, which is what she was doing on CBS over the weekend.
I'm thinking about this now through Trump's perspective. Who would be the ideal running mate? Like, are there you know, demographic or political holes he's trying to fit? Like, how do you sort through this if you're Trump?
I think it's a confluence of things. I think you have to legitimately look good, whatever that means by Trump's metric, whether that be shallow or deep. Next to him, you have to be somebody who just kind of seems like a vice president in something that Trump would cast. Mm. I think in the same way, you have to be an attack dog. I guess, pardon the phrasing here, but you have to be somebody who will be able to rep for Trump in every single measure, like you had mentioned at the top of this. You have to be able to go on cable, go to print, go on social media, go on Truth Social, go to these rallies, be able to at every turn say Donald Trump is right no matter what he says. And another thing to consider, Brad, is where any of these options stand on abortion. It's a huge vulnerability for Republicans right now. Donald Trump and his campaign are majorly aware of that. That's why they've been keeping his position so close to the chest. Just look at his interview with Time, saying that he's trying to stress that it be a states' rights issue. But he knows he's been, you know, all over the map. He's been quite conservative on abortion. And as the months have progressed, has moved a little more to what you consider like the Trump centrist position on abortion, which is, you know, let the states kind of figure it out. Like, I already took care of Roe. What else do you want from me?
I was proudly the person responsible for the ending of something that all legal scholars, both sides, wanted and in fact demanded be ended. Roe v. Wade.
But like, there are these suburban moms that we were talking about earlier, and the suburbs are so crucial to these elections that are decided in less than a dozen states, right? Think of the exurbs of Atlanta, suburbs of New York, which have been really consequential. Conversations about immigration and abortion, they're just really animating because it's so personal. Look what just happened in Arizona, a state that couldn't be any more conservative if it wanted to be. Taking that old abortion law off the books, I'm going to be really curious to see where any of these names we have mentioned kind of tries to paint that moderate path.
Right, because like gone are the days where you're trying to get like an extra conservative to prove to people like you're a true Republican. Like that is no longer the issue Trump is facing. He's got the party on his side. So now you wonder if maybe he's trying to pick somebody who will actually make him seem more moderate, particularly on something like abortion rights. Brittany Shepherd, thank you so much.
Of course, anytime.
Okay, one more quick break. When we come back, bronze and marble don't change much, but our heroes do. One last thing is next.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
And one last thing. If you ever took a field trip to the nation's capital, you might have passed through Statuary Hall. This is the room in the Capitol Rotunda that houses statues of great Americans. And there are actually rules on who gets in here. Each state gets to send in two statues for which there are standards. The subject has to be dead, that's kind of key. It can only represent one person, not like all of the Massachusetts Minutemen or something. And it can be between 7 and 8 feet tall, cast entirely in either marble or bronze, your choice. States are represented by a wide variety of figures, from Thomas Edison to Brigham Young to Amelia Earhart. But some of these statues are kind of, I don't know, blah. Perhaps it's all the rules and costs involved, but it seems like some states submitted folks 100 years ago and then never even thought about changing them. Like a few years ago, Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson noted that people in his state were ready for a change.
We want them, when they go to our nation's capital and they see the representation of our modern history there at our nation's capital, to say, I donated to that.
The two Arkansans on display were both little known by most residents. One was a judge who stood with the Confederacy. The other was a governor and staunch white supremacist. Well, soon, Arkansas is set to unveil not one, but two replacements.
Can you imagine a new member of Congress being there in Statuary Hall and seeing the statue of Daisy Gatson Bates?
This week, a new statue will go up commemorating Daisy Gatson Bates, who led the fight for school integration and personally accompanied the Little Rock Nine to school.
We will walk until we are free, a till we can walk through any school and take our children to any school in the United States.
This is a woman whose own mother was murdered without anyone ever being charged, who stared down crosses burned on her property. She went on to be a key leader at the NAACP. Talk about the range of figures in Statuary Hall. Wait until you hear who will be honored with the other Arkansas statue. That's right, Johnny Cash, the man in black, the singer-songwriter from the cotton country of Kingsland, Arkansas, will be holding a guitar and a Bible when his statue goes up later this year. When you think about it, it's kind of perfect. He seems to cross cultures the way he crossed musical genres, from country to rock, from crime to Christian redemption. While lots of country acts were wearing rhinestones talking about the good old days, Cash wore black as a nod to lives lost, to war, to drugs, to a system that could spit you out. He passionately spoke out on behalf of Native American rights. And when you hear from the sculptors who were commissioned to make these figures, they'll tell you these are legacies to be proud of.
One of the quotes that he had as is, in this life, we're all faced with a choice. We can choose love or we can choose hate. I choose love. And I think that's something that everyone has the ability to do.
Bates and Cash are uniquely Arkansas, uniquely American, and even in life, each of them seemed to be 8 feet tall. I mean, just as long as you get the features right, right? The U.S. Capitol does not need any statues that look like the porcupine Jesus over in Europe or the Lucille Ball statue in New York that look like a sea monster. Like, just get it right, and that's all people will care about. More on all these stories at abcnews.com or the ABC News app. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.
People who disappear without a trace.
Where is she?
The most notorious murder cases in New York.
Pure evil.
And the most devious killers.
There's a Hannibal Lecter feel to him.
For chilling true crime stories, follow the True Crime NYC podcast wherever you listen.